Hi, this is Tony Bellamy, and welcome to J Coolin' or Just Coolin', where bebop meets hip-hop, and hip-hop meets bebop, and the many flavors of jazz. On today's show, we are paying tribute to a musician that's been on the scene for over 62 years. You know what? It was 62 years. That was last year. It's 63 years. And I'm talking about Herbert Jeffrey Hancock, born April 12, 1940 in Chicago. Matter of fact, his birthday is coming up pretty soon. He's a pianist, if you don't know that, composer and band leader and innovator whose musical style spans from classical, post-bop, fusion, and funk. All right. And Herbie's parents were Winnie and Wayman Hancock, who named him after the black cowboy actor Herbert Jeffries from the 1930s. And as at age seven, Herbie Hancock became interested in music and playing the piano. Herbie then took lessons studying in classical music. And by the way, that shows you how, you know, his mother steered him towards playing the piano. Matter of fact, no, actually Herbie did, but his mother helped him out, okay? And he was also a child prodigy, studying classical music. He was a child prodigy, playing a concerto with the Chicago Symphony at age 12. And but his early teen years, while attending High Park High School, his musical style changed. And that's important to know. You know, he was a classical musician. Just to get a background, you know, we're just going to get a background of Herbie and, you know, how he moved forward. OK, you know, by attending, you know, to a variety show that was going on and watching fellow students improvising on a piano with a jazz trio. Now, he didn't even know what jazz was. And, you know, Herbie, you know, heard this music and was influenced and, you know, wanted to know more about it. He immediately changed from classical. He said, man, this is what I really want to do. He heard it, heard the harmony, the idea of doing improvisation. That was everything. Now, Herbie was influenced, important to know about this. Herbie Hancock was influenced by the Hi-Los, a group that came out of, you know, out of Wisconsin. You know, this was a major influence of just knowing how to do harmonies. Later on, that would influence him as a jazz musician. Now, you know, he started taking lessons at age 14, watching, you know, variety shows and stuff of that nature. You know, he was picking up because he didn't have a so-called jazz teacher. He was listening to the music by ear, all right? And he started picking stuff out. And, you know, his ear, listening, practicing, you know, this, as I said, was influential in his harmonic ways of he would arrange music. And this came also from Claire Fisher, and later on down in his career, which we're going to go into further, you know, I don't mean to digress, but it was a Speak Like a Child, a Kuru, which had this great harmony that he got the arrangements from the vocal group Hi-Los. And I'm going to say that one more time. You know, it's important because this was how Herbie was going to lay out his concept of the music. Herbie's early influences were George Shearing, Errol Gardner, Oscar Peterson, just were a name a few. And Herbie would listen to all these recordings note for note to learn improvisation and arrangements, okay? So after graduating from Hyde Park High School in Chicago, he enrolled at Grinnell College in 1956 to pursue an engineering degree. But Herbie Hancock instead began to focus on jazz and playing numerous gigs and arranging jazz concerts at school. You know, now he was supposed to be studying engineering, okay? And fortunately, you know, 1960, when he returned to Chicago, they say one credit shy, but he eventually got that engineering degree in electrical engineering, mind you. It became quite clear to Herbie Hancock, a musical career in jazz was his calling. Now, while playing in Chicago, Herbie had numerous gigs playing in jazz clubs. But, you know, you're a young man, 21, 20, 20-something years old, and, you know, the pay wasn't great. So he was still living at home, all right? But he had to start working. you know, to make his, you know, the vision of going into becoming this jazz musician. That was really a courageous move, by the way. Parents weren't looking into it. Okay, weren't digging it. Yeah, I mean to digress, but he had to work at the post office during the days to make ends meet and play at night. But in the fall of 1960, he got his first break playing with the legendary saxophonist Coleman Hawkins. And then he got a call that trumpeter Donald Byrd needed a pianist while performing in Chicago. Now, after that gig with Donald Byrd, he asked Herbie, you know, could you join his band and move to New York City? Now, his parents weren't really up into this, you know, who's Donald Byrd, you know, moving to New York City and making this move. But he convinced them that he was, you know, trumpeter Donald Byrd, in case you don't know, Places and Spaces, the Blackbirds, Professor Donald Byrd, Dr. Donald Byrd. A new perspective, just to give you an Cristo Redentor, that Donald Byrd. Okay. You know, after this gig that he had with Donald Byrd, he moved to New York City. You know, he said, okay, I'm going to join Donald and, you know, hopefully things will go forward. So Herbie, you know, left Chicago in 1961. And that same year, Herbie had his first recording on Donald Byrd's album called Freeform and Pepper Adams Out of This World at age 22 years old. Can you believe that? At age 22, he was booking, gigs, okay? And, you know, from Donald Byrd, who became a major influencer for Herbie Hancock to move to sign with Blue Note Records. It was Donald Byrd, okay? After joining Blue Note Records, Herbie recorded his first album in 1962, Taking Off, and his first hit was Watermelon Man. Now, once again, Donald Byrd advised Herbie Hancock to let Conguero, Mongo Santamaria, composer of Latin music, to record his same tune, Watermelon Man, which was a major crossover hit for Mongo Santamaria. Now, Watermelon Man was the first of many of Herbie's tunes that would become major hits for other musicians and expanded his reputation as a composer. Okay, and it's important to know that, how Herbie was being blessed, you know, making these moves, being Donald Byrd, you know, arranging for him and advising Herbie on how, you know, even telling him what kind of car to buy. And, you know, there was many things that Donald Byrd did for him, just composed because he saw what Herbie could do and what he could possibly. He wasn't there to keep him with him, to make him, you know, move forward, because Donald, he was about, hey, let's let this young man spread because I see the talent in him. I see that he can do things. Okay. So Donald Byrd saw Herbie as his protege and arranged for him to meet Miles Davis, who at the time was auditioning for a new Miles Davis quintet, which he joined in 1963. From 63 to 68, that quintet, which I'm going to tell you about, was with 17-year-old drummer Tony Williams, Wayne Shorter, that the group would become, and Ron Carter, along with Miles Davis. He learned to play free and learned that there are no wrong notes. You know, Miles, you know, gave the quintet, each one of these guys, confidence to stretch and play with passion. And during this time with Miles Davis, Tony Williams introduced Herbie to electronic music and the avant-garde. Now, Tony was listening to electronic music by a German composer who was working with harmonic music with electronic music, you know, adding electricity, you know, to it. Okay, but it was a composer, and his name was Stockhausen. Look him up. Stockhausen was the one that influenced Tony Williams, okay, in adding electronic music to jazz. So Williams formed his first group, Lifetime, that had John McLaughlin and Jean-Luc Ponty, by the way. And this, despite, you know, and let me go, you know, Tony Williams influenced him, but at the same time, Okay, Miles Davis was influencing Herbie to go from piano and adding electric keyboards, including the Fender Rhodes electric piano at Davis' insistence. You know, now, you know, Herbie's listening to Tony Williams, what he's doing, and at the same time, you know, Miles is pushing him to move forward, with some resistance, but eventually he goes into it. Now, this is pivotal, okay, because this influences Herbie, what Tony Williams did, Miles and Wayne Shorter and Chick Corea, okay? Also, what would happen with this new music was come out. You know, Miles Davis comes out with the Bitches Brew album. Herbie forms the music fusion group Mwandishi, and Wayne Shorter, along with Joseph Zawinul, would later form the group Weather Report, and Chick Corea returned to Forever. Okay, so you know, out of one came many. You know, Miles picked these guys because he felt they would be able to stretch his music and weight in the direction that he was going. So it's important to know how Miles was doing this. Now, Tony Williams would later play on Weather Reports. You know, let me digress and move forward a little bit. Tony Williams would later play on Weather Report's 1978 album, in case you don't know, was Mr. Gone, after, you know, Wayne Shorter and Joseph Zawinul invited him, and that music was punk jazz on there, and Mr. Gone. Also, Herbie Hancock and Wayne Shorter would play on Jaco Pastorius' debut album, Jaco. Okay, and what is the point here? You know, I'm pointing all of this that's going on in the music and what these guys were doing. The point is, they all collaborated with each other. Out of one, I will say one, came many. You know, Miles Davis, also, a.k.a. they were Miles' kids. And I asked myself, is that happening today with Robert Glasper's, the Terrace Martins, or the Kamasi Washingtons? You know, is that new way that's going to happen? Yeah, I don't know. But I'm just pointing it out just to show. So in 1968, I believe it was 1968 that Herbie finally left Chick Corea, takes his place. Okay, and leaves Miles Davis, and he forms the avant-garde group Mwandishi, which in Swahili means writer, named after Herbie Hancock. You know, that's what it means in Swahili, writer, and it was named after Herbie Hancock. And this came from James Ntume, another former member of Miles Davis Quintet, and he of Juicy Fruit, okay, who influenced Herbie to make his music more African. All right, now in the 1970s, Herbie Hancock experimented with electro styles, utilizing a wide array of synthesizers, and formed a group, Headhunters, and recorded that same album under the same name, Headhunters. Okay. Now, this album was influential, you know, in funk, jazz, hip hop, and even disco. And ask any DJ that's, you know, which I sometimes call arrangers of today, the Peak Rocks, Pete Rock, Premier, and Dilla Samples. Okay, it was based off of jazz, but at the same time, you know, real black music. You know what I mean? As Little Richard would say, you know, you might call it R&B, but real black music. You know, and that's something that was so dynamic about. There was a connection that reconnected almost spiritually. It's weird, but that's how hip hop and bebop met. Okay, and James Brown, you know, James Brown had jazz in his music. You know, Marvin Gaye, no doubt, had that. Okay, but as I said, the rappers might say to me, "Don't sweat the technique," and I say, "Oh well." But I will point you out, there were rappers in jazz all along, long before Gil Scott-Heron. There was Oscar Brown Jr., King Pleasure, Dizzy Gillespie, Eddie Jefferson, and Louis Armstrong. Okay, and by the way, Herbie Hancock, because of his engineering, you know, background, was always taking apart many of the instruments that was sent to him electronically. And what I mean by that, he was taking apart the Moog synthesizers and that were coming to him, and he would break them apart, put them back together, and because he wanted to create a sound that would become him. And by this he created the vocoder, along with Stevie Wonder in the 70s. Now, what's important about this, Herbie and Stevie's fusion, as they wanted to make this work for them, was also influenced by Miles Davis. Now, these same techniques, I'm going to point this out. I'm going to say it real slow, I want you to know, they transcended or moved forward into the rappers in the mid 2000s, in 2012s, 2013s, with auto-tunes, vocoder, auto-tunes, updated new technology, T-Pain, anyone, all right. So I'm just pointing this out to you, our music is connected. And it should be noted how this happened, Herbie Hancock, from the 1970s to the 2000s, has continued experimenting in jazz, funk, hip-hop, and disco music. Herbie's best-known compositions include Cantaloupe Island, Watermelon Man, Maiden Voyage, Tell Me a Bedtime Story, Speak Like a Child, Butterfly, Chameleon, Rocket, even stuff like that with Quincy Jones, all which are jazz standards and contribute to hip hop. Hip hop found jazz. No doubt they found it, but it was jazz was the building blocks that continue to do that today. Herbie Hancock has won over 14 Grammy Awards. Not that 14 Grammy Awards validate who Herbie Hancock was. It's just worldwide, he is still happening to, today, depending on the generation you're from, you may not know all of the things that Herbie has done, and the other side of Herbie Hancock is that he has influenced film, soundtracks, such as Blow Up, an Italian movie in 1966. He did the soundtrack for that. And, The Spook Who Sat by the Door, Hey Hey, It's Fat Albert, the cartoon, Round Midnight, which was an incredible movie. And I remember hearing that music by the album itself, or CD, whatever, the link, how they do it today. And Death Wish, he did the soundtrack for Death Wish, starring Charles Bronson. So this gives you an idea of the range of Herbie Hancock, Now, depending, as I said before, on the generation you are part of, you may not know Herbie Hancock's early music from post-bop, fusion, and funk that has influenced generations from baby boomers to millennials. But it's like 63 years. I can't tell you everything, but I'm telling you something. And Herbie Hancock is still here, and he's touring and recording today. Last year in Central Park, June of 2022, I saw him, and it was, what a show. What a show it was. And it was age ranging from anywhere from 20 to 70 years old was at this concert, outside of the gates and inside of the gates of where this was going on. And it just goes to show you, what influence that Herbie Hancock has done over 63 years and continues today. As I said, Herbie Hancock is still here and he's still recording, and just recently, just losing Wayne Shorter, transitioning, Herbie is the last of that core group that really influenced from Miles Davis, James Entume, Wayne Shorter, Tony Williams, Jaco Pastorius, John McLaughlin's still here, Ron Carter, Joseph Zawinul, were the guys that, continued this evolution of the music, and Chick Corea. You know, they were all part of being Miles' kids, all right? And it's important that I hope that you know about, you know, where and what he did, what Herbie Hancock has continued to do, doing today. As I said before, he has a degree in engineering, and he practices music theory, you know, did I say that? And he practices Buddhism, okay? He's a Buddhist, by the way, he chants. So, you know, Herbie Hancock chants his way to success every day. And to say that this man has, you know, spanned the, you know, over time and continued to be a major factor, it can't be said enough. As I said before, this is Just Coolin', J. Coolin' Podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show. It's all about Herbie Hancock, but it's also about Miles Davis in full effect still today. Miles' kids that continue to push the door open of what Miles was thinking and what they were thinking. They weren't afraid to stretch. They weren't afraid to continue to do the music in their way and stepping out into new lanes. Just Coolin', where hip-hop meets bebop and bebop meets hip-hop, the podcast. I'm Tony Bellamy. Thank you.